What up? Welcome to Tracks of Life. I'm Jordan.
And I'm Fabian. And that's Rooney.
Yeah, she's sitting over here. She's not going to bark this time.
We try not to. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see. We got Mike Karen this week, man.
Dude, this guy, he's like single-handedly changed the music business.
Yeah, for real, bro. For real. Times. I can't wait to share this with everybody, man. It's so cool. Like, a lot of people, our fans are, you know, they're in the music business, but a lot of you aren't.
Yeah.
So if you're not, this guy's an absolute legend, man. Signed some of the biggest artists, produced some of the biggest records. I mean, just set a lot of people on the path for success.
Yeah, I mean, he signed T.I., Trey Songz, Flo Rida, Wiz Khalifa, Bruno Mars, Ed Sheeran, CeeLo.
Like, the guy is a legend. It's unreal. Yeah. Yeah, man. And he's huge in the publishing market. Like, he's the guy, he just covers all, everything music is yeah, him, man.
He is the Wizard of Oz.
For sure. Behind the curtain, man. Exactly. For sure. No, man, it was a very humbling experience. We're happy to have him.
Yeah, I learned a lot. You will too. Check it out.
Everybody, I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watching on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Welcome, Mike. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
We got the quick rundown of the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically we started the idea because he and I were having the conversation and we were talking about how certain songs, regardless of when they were put out, give people certain memories just based on the moment that it began to mean something to them. Like the album I listened to in my first car was a big one for me. Mm-hmm. Like, no matter when I put it on, I feel the weather of that part of the year. Mm-hmm. I'm like in my first car. I'm like independent. My parents are at home. They got no idea where I am, and I'm just like cruising. Listening to an Incubus record.
Boom.
Yeah. It's not my favorite album of all time, but it's
just one of those memories.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Time machine almost.
Yeah.
For sure, exactly. Man. Mine's New Kids on the Block. My first concert, man. Imagine me at New Kids. But I was a kid, so
yeah.
I took my sister, but well, she took me. But yeah, that's so every time I hear that, I think of that. You know what I'm saying?
Who was your favorite kid?
Jordan, man.
Sup.
No, nothing. No, because he had the high octave. Remember Jordan? He could hit them crazy notes. Like, he had, Mike's like, I don't remember.
No, I actually remember, and I had curly hair just like one of those kids at their peak. I got like confused for one of them at like an amusement park.
Uh-huh.
And got to see what that was like. I had like a, you know.
You just used it to cut lines?
It was, yeah, no.
No.
I signed an autograph as Justin Timberlake once when I was
Did
younger.
Did you really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And I didn't really look like him, but I was like, I'll take it. Yeah, why not?
She was topless, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
I won't say where I signed.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. No doubt. Man. Nobody ever, I don't get confused for anybody. If I go to, you know, I'm only famous to nerds, right?
Yeah.
So Mike, tell us, man.
Nerd famous is like pretty high now these days.
Yeah, I mean, right? But that's always been my favorite part of my end of the business because like you could, you know, make a living and nobody bothers you. You know what I'm saying? Like you just go and do it. You know what I'm saying?
Is that why you schedule appearances at so many conventions? As many as you can get.
If they're paying, I mean,
you
I'm going.
You go outside, you give the valet your ticket, like get your own fucking car.
Yeah, exactly. Like what is this guy doing? didn't you Uber here?
Yeah.
So Mike, what do you got to share with us, man?
You know, we were talking before about memory and how we all think we have good memories until we realize
they're not. You're on the spot. There's a microphone in front of you.
Yeah. No, but I mean, oh God, I know I can tell you about music that that changed my life. Mm-hmm. I could think about I do, you know, there is those things where you it's funny. I think about a lot of memories connected to music. They're not always necessarily the most like influential music in my life because like I remember taking a vacation and I had three CDs mm-hmm. and listened to these three CDs just over and over and over. I remember there was a Postal Service album. It was one of the Air albums and the Virgin Suicide soundtrack. Nice.
Okay,
and it was in Hawaii. And I cannot put any of those. Like, if I hear any of that music, it's immediately North Shore, Kauai. The temperature,
the breeze, right?
The smell.
There's a worse place for music to take you.
yeah, definitely.
I would listen to Postal Service all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
With your Hawaiian shirt on.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. But the memory that I can say is connected to an influential album, I would say, would be Tribe Called Quest, Low End Theory. Mm. Which was a big album for me, which I was 13 and had just started getting into DJing. I think I had it like a turntable and a cassette deck and a CD player, and I was mixing the three uh-huh. of them on this realistic mixer with no crossfader.
Wow.
Trying to figure
so
out
you were
how
just
to do
you
that.
Were just rocking, man.
I had like, you know, it was a weird time in music where like all three formats were going at the right. same time and you're sort of like moving over, and you know, I only got a record player because I was starting to get a DJing, uh-huh. but I didn't have enough for two at the time.
Right.
And I had most of my music on either cassette, because up to that point, and then I was like transitioning the CD, right. so like all three formats. It's
worst case scenario. Yeah, right? Yeah. For a DJ.
Get a turntable, a Mickey Mouse cassette player, and a Discman that skipped.
Exactly. And a mixer with no crossfade, dude. Yeah.
Exactly.
Hey, you got through.
And a real air yeah. horn.
Right.
and then DJing, you know, first of all, I had to replace my record collection, so I was, which I couldn't, you know, I had my CDs and cassettes to, mm-hmm. to be able to do and put a party set together and to get vinyl, so you were like, had, you know, allowance and whatever, mm-hmm. odd job money, and I had to replace this, so I was going to use record stores, mm-hmm. and of course none of them had like what you wanted, so
of
you kind of had to like
it's the leftover crap, right?
Yeah, exactly. So then you started just going through records and uh-huh. just you know, $2-$4 to try mm-hmm. to just get enough to fill a crate or two, you know?
So like so you look kinda, right going in, right?
Exactly. But then you didn't want to spend even $3 on a record that you didn't want, so you could pull them all out, there's a turntable and you could just listen to everything, uh-huh. And I think that like changed my, and it's crazy to say this because like now anybody has access to every single yeah. piece of music,
yeah, instantly,
like,
too, right there, yeah.
But back then you only had the access to music that was available at the record store in your town that you could afford,
right?
Yeah, like,
exactly.
I mean, just think about yeah. that, like, yeah. you might not, or the radio, right?
Exactly,
like, whatever was in you know, your radio, your the signal strength, and right. Stations were available in your area. It was just yeah. so limiting. You were just so sheltered.
And if you were young, what your parents would let you buy too.
That's
I
true.
I remember I used what to they go would listen play. To Eminem in the record store. Uh-huh. I listened to it again and again and again before my parents were like, did you pick something yet? Because I knew I couldn't get that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Or what your older brother or sister had.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
My sister put me onto a lot of music that, like, at the time, I didn't know what I felt about. Soon after, I determined it was terrible. And now I probably release a lot of music just like it.
Similar to so, it. Yeah, yeah.
Sure. It's just, you know, it's all there for a reason.
Yeah.
But yeah, so some point, like probably within the first year of DJing, I heard Low End Theory, and then it just, you know, it was sort of like, sometimes you can't blame people's tastes in bad music because they just have never been exposed yeah. to good music. But
right.
then when you get exposed to good music, like what, you know, path it leads you, and that led me like down path of, you know, you learn about sort of native tongues mm-hmm. and it brings you to De La Soul and Leaders of New School and all these things. But mm-hmm. then it also led me to like, I just got fascinated by samples, and something yeah. about the Low End Theory, and some soon period after that, I started understanding what samples were and listening to the stuff that they sampled. And that just just kind of like opened, and that all. And, by
and,
the way,
and you're young at this point. You're like a kid. You're like a teenager. Where how? What are we?
That was like 13, 14. Yeah, right. Yeah. That was taking the bus or like waiting for the weekend to get your mom to drive you to you know, a record store, and then I think probably at that you know, of those next couple of years, Midnight Marauders, the Midnight Marauders album, I think was probably like the first like super anticipated album where you like waited till album release. And I have lots of memories.
You were
like,
excited for it. You were hyped for this.
Excited for it, waiting for it. And then like when I got it, like just, you know, that week of release, I have like several memories of like that time.
That's one of the things I miss about like, the old school way of getting music is just like the anticipation for one day and waiting and hoping that it sell out and hoping you get your one thing. Cause now,
and you're in line with like-minded kids waiting to get it. You know, it's an excitement. That's not, that doesn't exist.
You save the t-shirt so you have it on that day. Yeah.
That still happens. It just doesn't happen to you.
I guess you got
distractions of, you know, rent and work and all these things.
Life, right?
But I mean, like, why are people lining up for like a, you know, a Supreme or clothing drop or whatever? It can't be just for the item itself. It's that experience, that anticipation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And makes sense. And people, you know, some people get a little shortchanged now when just somebody just announces something like without like there's some fun, and people don't want to admit that they like waiting for things, but I think sometimes they do.
I love the anticipation. That's why I love watching movie trailers.
Me too.
I'll sit there and watch like 20 movie trailers in a row and just pick the ones that I'm just stoked to come out.
Well, you're like, you're also getting the best parts of the movie without having them watch it.
Right.
Or the worst parts.
You know, and that's the worst part too, when you go to actually watch the movie and you're like, this is the whole fucking trailer. I had all the good parts in the trailer.
I'm like, okay, saw the trailer. Awesome. Done.
I'm good. I don't got to waste 2 hours. Yeah,
right? I'll watch like a 5-minute trailer sometimes, and by the end of it, I'm like, What did you leave out?
Yeah.
Like, really?
You ever been disappointed and you go to like watch the trailer like on iTunes or something and it actually is like a scene in the movie? It's not even like a real trailer.
Old ones. I do that still. Yeah. So there's still some old movies I'm not sure if I want to see or not.
Right. Yeah. But talking about sampling, Mike, you know, Mike is responsible for one of my favorite records of all time. He grabbed the sample, flipped it. Called Swagger Like Us. That's later on. I know we're talking early, but I'm jumping ahead in time. But
I could tell you that I have the absolute memory of when I heard that record, where like literally was at a place on Santa Monica Boulevard upstairs. This doesn't exist anymore, and was I wish I knew what DJ it was. Played the MIA record and heard that lyric. And
you're like,
it was
this
just
is it.
Like a text. I think I texted a DJ friend of mine. It was probably 12:30 in the morning. Like, you think is the acapella of this out there? You know,
and
it was just like, it was just the same thing happened to me. Like almost within weeks, where I heard. Somebody was playing a chop up of the I think it was an Annie Lennox record that they used that I immediately heard and said, this I gotta flip. And then somebody, I don't know if like Pop Wanzel was like, you know, listening to that same bootleg, but he beat me to it and for a Nicki single. But that thing, like as soon as there was another one, just instant moment.
You feel it. Like you're like, that's got to do something with that.
So, you know, it's like, how could you not mess? How could you like, you know, how could you mess that up?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And it was a good movement that you created with it, because like, it was like the rat. Remember the Grammys? They made like the new Rat Pack. They did almost like a black and white thing. Yeah. It was just such a cool, it was cool. You know what I'm saying? At the time it was like the epitome of cool, you know?
I loved that song. And I remember when I heard your version first, and so I went back to the MIA version.
You're like, oh, this is a song?
Well, I listened to the whole thing, like waiting for that line, because I figured it was in the chorus.
Right.
And it just like, it skated right by me the first time I listened to it. And I'm just like, that made it so much cooler, because it's like, the fact that you just like heard that line I think it's in like the second.
Well, that's
verse
the genius of it.
Right?
Yeah, that's like, it sounds like a random like 2 minutes and 3 seconds.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's the genius of it, Mike. You know, for sure.
I have like thousands of MP3s that are marked like at 2 minutes and 3 seconds.
Oh yeah,
I believe at 1:43 at like 32 seconds where like, I don't want to, every time I go back to play it, I don't want to have to listen to the whole song to remember what it was I loved about it.
Right. Yeah.
So it just go right to that, that part.
Mike is a meticulous guy. You don't know what it's like mixing records with Mike Caron. You have no idea. The stories are endless.
Oh, sure.
I'm sorry.
No, but he's like, he's like, let's try that. You know that hi-hat? I feel like it's just, it's not a volume thing. Let's try like a quarter dB. And I'm like, what the fuck is he talking about?
I've never said a quarter dB. Well,
maybe. He denies it every time I accuse him of it. He denies it.
I would say 0.2.
You know what I'm saying? Like the perfectionist ear. It's like, oh my God, it's 4 in the morning. I just want to go to sleep. Fuck this. Sorry.
You know? You know, I don't know. They add up. It's like... sometimes when the record goes to like 2 or 11 mm-hmm. or like 23, you're like, did I not like pay attention to
right.
What could we have done?
Right? To go the extra way. So
was the verse too long?
Right.
Or, you know, no. So you just want to go to bed at night feeling like you didn't like hold back. Actually, Craig Kalman like would like encourage me. He's just like, you know, and I was really, one of the surprises I had was I asked once Serban like what his pet peeve was mm-hmm. on mixing, and he said when people don't give me feedback and they go and mix it with someone else.
Right,
and
give me his comment first, right?
Well, he was like, and I was like, what if they gave you like 20 versions and you were like, and after 20 versions and they were just like, they didn't want you to drive, they didn't want to bother you, like,
right.
and just be like, oh my God, this guy's going to kill me. I'm asking for 20, version 21. Right. Let me just go take it to someone else. No, he goes, I want it.
Yeah.
I want the challenge.
I feel the same way. I agree with him on that. Cause I've actually been there where it's been like you're mixing and then everybody just disappears. And then you hear the song come out. You're like, what the fuck? Yeah. Like, am I that off? You know what I mean? But it's like, but I see from your perspective, it's like, I don't want to bother him again. Maybe, or maybe I was that far off. I don't know, man.
I think I would just say after I heard that comment, I love that kind of feedback. I would just say, hey, do you want to go to 21?
Right. Yeah. At least have a combo, right?
Yeah.
No, but even talking about like taking songs like, and I could share a million stories with Mike because we've done so many songs together. But like there was a record, and they did an article about it, and I spoke about Mike in the article. It was like a record called Low by Flo Rida with T-Pain, and it was out for months. Like it was out for a while, and it wasn't really going. But he believed in it, you know, and it goes back to what he was just saying. And he was like, well, let's try a new mix on it. Because it was out with, there was another mix or rough, I don't know if it wasn't, I think it was mixed.
No, the first version, so here's the story with that song. It wasn't mixed and it was out and it started to pick up in Miami. And then we tried to clear T-Pain and he didn't want to be on the record.
Oh, all right.
At the time. And then I went and found somebody who sounded just like T-Pain. And I had
something like Reggie or something.
Yeah, probably Reggie killed it. And Reggie, when we replaced him, we got a big film thing and it was starting to really take off. And then I got the call that like Payne wants to be back on the record. And we put it back. He put his vocals back in the mix. And I said, you know, it's missing something. Mm-hmm. I'm like, and I realized there was some harmonies that Reggie did that like added some flavor to it that I was like missing on the Payne version.
So much work.
So we threw that back in there. And then, you know, whatever happened. But the funny thing is every time I'm in Atlanta and I hear the song over the years, they only play the Reggie version. I've never heard the T-Pain version on the radio in Atlanta.
That might, you know what? I feel like you're true. I feel like that's because I've actually been with Payne before and he's like, who the fuck is that? I was like, we've actually had that conversation. Like, damn, man.
But there's definitely four different mixes of that song that exist
around
in different places that you hear at different times.
Yeah. And that song, like, I was explaining, like talking. We were talking earlier about some of the things that you were responsible for, and that was like one of the early introductions to download music. That was like one of the first big songs, if I'm not mistaken. You know what I mean? That really made an impact as a download versus physical sales, right?
That was a big one. That one, I gotta check. It's got to be getting close to diamond. I think it's very close.
Got to be.
It was at 9 the last time I checked. It was probably a year ago.
Yeah, that's wild, man.
But, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was, and right around the next one was the I think it's still might be the record for most downloads in a week, which was right around.
Yeah,
that in 1 week. In 1 week, it had just a huge. It had leaked, and then it built up a demand, and it had this one huge week. But
it leaked before the week.
It had leaked, a version of it had leaked like a couple weeks. And at that time, it had built up, a demand. So when it came out first week, legally, it just went.
That's awesome.
And everybody was fiending off of Get Low, right? Yeah. So they were like, the next one's got to be. And that song was crazy. That song was insane.
Yeah, that's funny. That one was Aaron Bashuk's idea. He had wanted to flip the Spin Me Round like a record for like a long time, and finally found the right person and the right beat that I had given him and it's just magic, you know?
That song always takes me right to Hangover.
It's the perfect
song for that
definitely,
movie.
Yeah. Yeah, and the way they shot that scene where they were incredible. But leave it to you though, Mike. Like, yo, talking about Flo Rida, this dude finds the scariest 6'8" guy with no neck, arms like, 24-inch biceps, and turns him into the biggest pop star in the world. Like, who does that, man?
Oh man, he was a big teddy bear. I never saw that, but he's talented. I remember the first song I heard from him. It was, or at least the second song. The first song I heard from him was Birthday, but the second song was this song called. I don't know if it was called Green or it was called Stop Sign, but it was definitely like I'm different, like a green stop sign. I just hadn't heard a rapper say that. Right. And I'm just like, okay, this guy's trying to be original. Right.
It's
like,
early 2000s. It's a different time. Right?
Yeah. I can imagine that lyric now. But still, I mean, that's very visual. Sure. Green stop sign. Totally. Like, it's hard to be like sort of simple and stand out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think the hearing songs out. I'll tell you one a song that I remember like it was yesterday, the moment where I was and affected me, and then led to another record, which was in 2003. I had planned the longest vacation of my life. It was almost 3 weeks. I was going to Brazil with 5 friends.
I remember that.
I had got one of those big brick iPods, those like ones that held 60 gigs. It was crazy,
which was a huge deal.
And it was like
4 songs.
It was like, it looked like 3 wallets stacked on top of each other. It was just, deep one. And I ripped, I had this pile, I listen to so many demos every single day. I always prioritize demos, but then I have albums that I want to listen to. And the albums used to be physical and they just would stack up, right? So I had this stack of 60 albums that had meaning to listen to. And I just ripped them all into this brick iPod. And I just went down to Brazil and basically soundtracked. I was just ripping through these 60 albums while doing whatever we were doing. Uh-huh. And I was on the beach in Rio. It was hot. Beach in Rio is crazy because it's like a shopping mall is just passing by you. You're just sitting there, and then they come by offering water, and then they come by offering with a cart with a full bar on it. Uh-huh. Then they offer you some sunscreen. Then they come by with hats. Right. And it's full amazing. On, and just amazing.
BMWs.
And I hear I was listening to this Talking Heads greatest hits box set, and at the end of it had 2 unreleased demos. They're like original demos before they'd got signed. Oh. And there was this one little thing of this guitar strum, and it had this great backbeat. And I was like, the first thought, I remember just sitting on the beach hot and just listening to me and just thinking, oh my God, this is what 3000 heard and inspired him to write. I just figured
you got
it out.
You
I was like,
you got it.
Chris, where did that song come from? Right, every song comes from something. Right. Everything is a domino. I want to make my own domino set eventually, just like to symbolize how one thing connects to another. But and then this vocal comes in, and it's put the sugar on my tongue, and it's this crazy lyric, and I'm like, holy shit, that's a hit. Mm-hmm. Chorus, uh-huh. Give me some whatever, and I was like, I saw what they cracked with Hey Ya, and then there's this hit chorus that 3000 didn't use,
right?
That was how I listened to it,
right? Okay,
And I came back to LA and I sent the song to 10 different producers to make to flip into mm-hmm. records, and like all 10 were like, ah, that sucks. Mm-hmm.
And like, you took the romance out of my yeah. excitement of what I was experiencing, right?
Yeah, it was like, and they were like, you know, it wasn't a soul sample. It was like, you know, like late 70s, early 80s alternative mm-hmm. music yeah. or whatever, but it was a happy alternative music. Mm-hmm. It was just yeah. weird yeah. subgenre. And
which was rare.
Which, yeah. yeah. And then I think I remember like after like the like 10th producer passed on doing it, I was at a show at the Viper Room, and there's this like hip hop band and with a beatboxer, and I just invited them to come over the next day to my studio. I said, you guys want to come over and help me on something? Mm-hmm. And I just made I had just bought a real 808, like okay. I'd find like a yeah. classic yeah. 808, and made this the Trick Daddy Ludacris CeeLo record mm-hmm. called Sugar off of that, and it was just but it was
no big yeah.
but the yeah, but being on the beach in Rio, and I don't, you know, the funny thing is, I listened to 60 other albums, uh-huh. and I can't remember one.
It was that other moment.
One, other one that I listened to, and I remember that moment of hearing that song.
Huh. Which is crazy, too, because it kind of is, it's like two songs will take you back to that one place. Because you hear those, you hear like the OG version and then the one that it turned into. That's crazy. No, talk about right place, right time for that band that was at the Viper Room, though.
Yeah. That's true.
Jeez,
that's like the fairy tale of like, yeah, we were playing the Viper Room, and then all
this guy walks up to us.
Yeah, exactly. Come to my studio tomorrow.
Well, I didn't sign them, so yeah. It wasn't Oops. Perfect for them, but it worked out.
No doubt, man. No doubt. Talking about signing, Mike, you signed a lot of incredible artists over the year, man.
Yeah, a couple.
Like, you know, one or 100, you know what I'm saying? can you maybe share a little bit with us?
The first page of a book never tells the full story. And those news alerts and headlines, like the ones we get on our phones, don't even scratch the surface of what the story is really all about. Stories are like people, multi-layered and complex. It takes some digging to find the truth, but when we find it, it can change our world. We like to dig. The news on Merritt Street, Essential Television.
Yeah, I'm trying to think in context of this, of like when I heard what, mm-hmm. like what and where. I'm trying to think of a good early one where I liked, where I just heard a song that like, I remember a funny one. This is a true story, and I'm just going to give somebody a lot of props for this and make me look bad, but I'll say it anyways. So I had a friend who told me that his friend, my friend Josh, he told me his friend was working at like this cool startup R&B label, and he gave me like this 8-song sampler. Remember everyone did samplers back then? Sure. And I had 2 songs per artist for like 8 different artists. And he gave it to me, and I listened to it, and there was this... this like soul, male soul, kind of like Bill Withers, just incredible vocalist on there. And I was like, oh, wow, this guy's amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to send it to my boss, Craig. I sent him the demo, and he like hit me back. He was like, oh, my God, this is a smash. Mm-hmm. And I said, really? He said, yeah, this is a smash. This is a thank you. Let's go after this immediately. Mm-hmm. And I was like, which song? And he picked another song that wasn't even from the artist.
Had nothing to do with you.
I like, yeah. And it was the song he heard was, which now is like still a classic song and like a favorite of mine, but I glossed over it on first, which was Sunshine Anderson, heard it all before.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
And that was like, I don't know, the second song on the sampler. And the stuff that the artist that I loved, which was track 3 and 4, was Anthony Hamilton.
Uh-huh.
Equal.
Amazing.
But like, you know, and so we basically did this label deal with these guys. He's like, they had like, they were they had this super backing. They were just, it was the first time I actually saw like they'd invited me to dinner at Crustaceans, and there'd be like 28 people
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh shit.
It's a nice $20,000 dinner.
I was like, how do I get out of here? Because they may be thinking I'm paying for
right,
it.
Exactly.
And I had like That's a tiny expense account.
Yeah. Like, eat your garlic noodles and get out.
Yeah, I was like, I'm ordering like a Coke and leaving.
Right, exactly. No ice, right?
And so, So yeah, so then and it was crazy, and they went crazy, and they bankrupted the label. And,
oh wow.
And we had
gotten, 'cause of those dinners,
and we had, yeah. And we had gotten Sunshine Anderson out, and like that was like that turned out to be a hit, and uh-huh. which of course it was, and like Anthony Hamilton got like trapped in the middle of this bankruptcy from the label.
Stinks,
and
man. It was just, what a voice.
Yeah, voice, yeah. Yeah. And a great guy, and like a loyal guy who's still with like his manager for mm-hmm. like 15 years.
Oh, wow.
Like we're just
that's rare.
Grinding yeah. it out. I know.
That's so rare.
Not like social climbing artist. Like
yeah.
sometimes I see the social climbing artist and like I guess that's kind of necessary because that's yeah. what you're doing. You're growing your career. You're,
well, yeah. And especially then, these days, right? I mean it's kinda like
well you gotta think. You get to different levels of your career, and if you're of course if your partner or manager or whatever doesn't want to work as hard as you want, right. then
you
can't get held back. But then if they do, then there's that, is it a move? Is it just a shortcut or is right. it something? Because
it's stepping stone
necessary.
Yeah, I feel you.
But yeah, that was one I remember. I remember like hearing that at that moment. I also remember some like songs. I remember like I signed this I loved Outkast. I like Outkast was like probably one of my favorite acts. And what do you do when you're an A&R guy and like you can't, you're at the wrong label to work with your favorite act.
Mm.
Like you kind of hear something that you like in similar ways right. and you sign it, right?
Right.
So I got this demo from these college kids in Kentucky, in Western Kentucky State, which is right outside of Nashville. And Bowling Green, Kentucky, and I flew down, and they had this. They just had a vibe. It was like a 8-member group, which mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know. I couldn't find. They had no manager. I had them for like 2 years. I couldn't find a manager. Everyone was like 8-member rock group. No thanks.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that sounds like an absolute yeah. nightmare, right?
And it got down to 6 members, and I had like a verbal agreement that I would send 3 on the road at a time, and they had agreed to that. Right, exactly. And like, so I was like going around the manager. I was like, "There's only 6, and only you only have to put 3 on the road." It was still hard to get a manager, but I worked with them for like a long time, and we're trying to figure it out. I'm trying to find the sound and trying to find the producer, and they actually found this guy who was working at a Verizon store, mm-hmm. and they were like on to something, and they sent me a CD, FedEx at the time, because mm-hmm. that was how you got CDs, and it came to my apartment. It was my first apartment, and I got it it showed up on the day of my birthday, which was a Saturday. Saturday mm-hmm. morning delivery. Remember you had to pay extra
for
that?
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Way extra. Yeah.
And I pulled it out, and it was a song called, the group was called Nappy Roots, and the mm-hmm. song was called Aw Nah. And the first demo for Aw Nah, I just remember hearing it, and I was like, oh shit.
That's awesome.
We're going to break this
group. We got one, yeah.
We got a hit. Yeah. And just like being alone on my birthday before dinner,
right.
like kind of just, dancing around the room.
What a birthday present, man.
Exactly. Yeah, oh yeah. Oh yeah.
That's incredible.
But that's the best part of like, I feel like every day I get up at 7 and like turn on the computer mm-hmm. and a bunch of emails come in that were sent overnight from sessions or from producers. And I'm like, any day, it's like you're getting 20 birthday presents. Because, you open a bunch of birthday presents. Yeah. You don't like all of them.
Right, exactly. But that one.
But anytime you could be getting, but any day you could be getting like the best birthday present ever. So
yeah, awesome. Man. Like an Ed Sheeran or
yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, let's see. You can't get those every day.
not every day for sure. Yeah, totally, man.
Yeah.
You said your boss, Craig, was it Craig Aronson?
Craig Kelman.
Craig Kelman.
Yeah. Who I worked with for now, 24 years, almost 20, wow. almost 25 years.
Listen, he's got the meanest crossover and layup in basketball you've ever seen in your life.
Wow, I've never seen it.
Really?
I've never seen him play basketball.
Let me tell you something. We would be in Miami. He was crossing over. I mean, he's a freaking animal. I never seen that. I was like, what is going on? This little dude.
Wow.
Never saw it. Never saw anything like it before. Incredible, man.
I remember a lot of like the hits, like where I was when like the great songs came in. Like this one day when I met with this publisher for the first time, and he brought in this five song CD of demos of rough like ideas from this new artist that he was publishing. Or I don't know if he signed him or if like he had the company had signed him and just said, hey, you work this. Mm-hmm. And the first one on there or second one on there was Akon. I see you winding and grinding. Yeah. And wow. I was like, oh,
yeah,
this is available?
Yeah.
Of course, I like sent it to, I think I said applies at the time, and he cut it and just threw it out the next day.
Right. Yeah.
And, like, and screwed and messed it up because I don't know like if they knew, anyone knew about that song. But as soon as Plies' version like exploded in Miami from that day, like it went right back and it got pulled. And, like, and they were like, oh, no, we're keeping this one. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, I have a funny Plies story. I don't know if you remember this. Well, we got a million Plies stories. But so I mixed a record called Shorty. It was him and T-Pain. Drummer Boy produced it, right? It was Drummer Boy. So I get so we get it done. It's all mastered. Mike calls me pissed. Fabian, I have to ask you something. I'm like, what, Mike? What happened? Like, because I knew something was wrong. He's like, what makes you think suck me with ice is allowed to be played on the radio? Why would you leave that in the clean verse? But it was like last minute. Everything was done already. It was mastered. So it's like in production, like about to go out. And he's like, what is wrong? Like, he was so mad at me that day. I remember that, man.
Oh, so you know, another funny one of that is I used to do the clean edits myself, like at like early Pro Tools, maybe 3, and it was like the most amazing thing because I could then do these clean edits so quickly. And
because you can see it. Yeah, exactly.
I can see it. And so there's this Trick Daddy record, and he calls me mad one day, and I said, what? He goes, why'd you take, I'm going to mess up this word, but. Zephyl, like out of the clean version. And I was like, I thought that was like some sort of drug.
Right. And he's like,
it's the type of bottled water we drink in Miami. Like, I was like, what?
Zephyr Hill. It was probably Zephyr. I think that's a bottle of water down there that's popular. Yeah.
I thought it was like, you know, one of those, you know, like.
Who knows? Yeah.
Like, I feel like with Trick Daddy, technical. You're better off guessing. It was explicit.
Yeah.
I just figured it was the name of a drug that I hadn't heard of. Right. It just sounded technical.
Gotta go. Yeah. Better safe than sorry. Like, for sure.
Out.
Yeah, totally, man. Totally.
That was one of the most, the only time I really thought I was getting fired ever was like, I got a call that like the Time Warner board had like been like messaged. This was back in the whole, you know, whatever era when I was also doing the clean versions, which I stopped after this because I took out the F word.
Uh-huh.
But you know, you take out, you leave the first,
the foot,
and you take it out, but there's a snare right after that.
Uh-huh.
And so when you hear like a clicky snare, it goes, fuck.
Yeah, exactly.
And, and no, the word is not
right,
there.
Right, the word is not there, I promise.
We hear the word.
Right, yeah.
It's not there. We hear
I'm looking right at it. It's not there.
But then they're like, it doesn't matter. If people hear it, it doesn't matter if it's not there.
They're going to get sued. The mother from Walmart's going to call.
Yeah. No, the mother from Walmart did call. Oh. The letter was there. And I was like,
oh, geez.
I feel like you have to take out so much less of a swear word nowadays.
Oh, no, it's so different now.
Yeah, you just got to take out like half of the vowel.
Yeah. Even like you watch TV at night. Like I'm watching watching Housewives. And, and I'm like, did they just say what I think they said?
Did you just say what I think you said?
For sure, man, for sure.
My the one show I watched that I'll stand behind it because it just gives me just memories was Storage Wars.
Oh, I love Storage Wars.
Yeah, because I would fast forward it. I'd only watch on TiVo because you could get through a good episode in 8 minutes.
Yeah, easy, yeah.
You just wanted to see the storage open, exactly. All the other talking.
Yeah.
They can't go all the way in, but they all like, yeah. They have that lean.
Right. I'd have like one of the doctor's stethoscope thing with the dentist.
I've always wanted to go do it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I basically did that 1,000 times by just going to swap meets and obscure record stores and secondhand thrift shops and looking through records. And every time you're looking through creative used records looking for treasure, it's like the Storage Wars is the closest thing to that.
Sure.
But let me think. More songs that affected me. I remember hearing the Straight Outta Compton album for the first time. And I remember that was when I was 12. And that was, and I'd heard like Boys in the Hood, Eazy-E before that. But that album just came on. That album, and I want to say it couldn't have been, it wasn't the same year as Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction, because I feel like it was.
It was definitely around.
I feel like I heard those in a first, both in a 6 month period. You both I remember listening to. I had like just gone, like, you know, see, like that was like right before I started DJing, and I'd like got this 5-disc player somehow for my birthday or Christmas or something, and just listening in my room, just like full tilt.
Yeah.
And those two records, which sounded both insanely good.
Yeah.
Like insanely good, and actually
from production to make to every, they just a wall of awesomeness.
Yeah. Like. Oh yeah, and the speakers. I don't know how I wound up with these. Like I bought these like used speakers, these Altec Lansing like just home stereo speakers that are still actually there in the lounge at our studios in Cahuenga. And I awesome. At some point when I was like in my early 20s, I painted them white. They were like brown wood. I painted them white to fit into this apartment I got, and they sounded amazing. These two was am I right? Did they both come out?
87, 88. 87 was Appetite, 88 was Straight Outta Compton.
Yeah, so around the same, yeah.
Yeah, and so I was, 11. So so now I'm like a year behind. So, but those records just sounded, they had that, you know, both had their own sort of perfect mix wall of sound. Mm-hmm. At that time, like sonically, so much more impactful than anything I'd heard.
They hit and, so hard, both, like the first song on both of them is just like,
yeah.
I'm like afraid to go back and listen to those records now because like when I just think about like low end and high end, how crisp and how like they felt perfect and like they might, if I hear them now, I might find some flaws.
Well, because your ears are a lot different now. Obviously, they've grown different. And also now you can't even compare it to today because back then you know the rules. Like you could do a lot more dynamic stuff back then.
Mm.
On a technical end of things. You know what I mean? So it's like we don't have the luxury of making stuff sound like that anymore. It's got to be, you got to find that in being loud, you know what I'm saying, as opposed to the you know, you could have it where there's a quiet point. Oh, that's cool to have. You could tell now everything's just got to be on, you know what I'm saying, the whole time.
Yeah, back then they would like just make the chorus louder. So everything, right? Yeah. The entire music and
just
vocals.
Take the master fader. You lower the dB for the rest of the song, then the hook comes, you just flick it up and then bring it back down for the downbeat of the next verse. Yeah, for sure, man. Where'd you grow up, Mike?
I grew up here. I grew up
Los Angeles.
Yeah.
The rare Los Angeles.
I grew up
native.
I grew up what they call it, the slums of Beverly Hills.
The slums. Had a rough slums, a rough area over there.
Yeah.
No. He's actually right up the street, you know.
I was so lucky because I could, I had a Music Plus about 6 blocks from my house. Okay. So I stood in line. I figured out about concert tickets when I was around 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. And that if you got up at like 6 and you waited for 2 hours, you could basically be at the front of the line and get the first pick on like tickets. I went to like Janet Jackson, Rhythm Nation.
Oh,
and,
dope.
A bunch of good tours for me, you know, pop tours at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then just, you know, being central to get to Hollywood or, you know, shows. And I went to Lollapalooza, you know, was easy to get to in 1991, 1992, 1993. Mm-hmm. You know, Coachella from the beginning. Uh-huh. Like, it was.
Some people don't know that it actually, Coachella's been around for more than like 3 years. A lot of people don't know.
Yeah, I had some. I remember Coachella before, like, you know, in the early festival days, they just don't have all their, like, logistics. Like, festival logistics are crazy.
Oh,
every kid thinks they could throw, a festival. It's so hard.
No, it's got to be nuts.
Just imagine how they have to be prepared for weather and prepared for, like, whatever. But back then, Coachella, you know, they'd have one weekend. It'd be 2 days, and those people, there's no stagecoach. They would be just working for 2 days a year. Like, the security people didn't care.
Right.
They were like, oh, if I get fired, I'm like, what happens? Nothing?
Exactly.
I'm not going to be back here for a year.
Right, exactly.
I just remember one time, like early Coachella, a friend of mine saying, oh, let's go backstage. And as I was in the business, but he wasn't. And I said, oh, how?
Like, what do you got going on
and,
here?
And we walked to the main stage security gate, and he goes into his jean jacket. I remember this like it was yesterday. and pulls out a microphone that he bought at Radio Shack earlier that day and said to the security, I got to get to the stage and only these 9 people are allowed to come with me. Don't let anyone else in.
Like very assertive, like he's supposed to be here.
Oh my God, yeah. So much confidence. Like so much confidence. And then got to back to the stage.
Oh,
back
so you worked, stage. You were in.
Oh, it was in. And he went to the back of the stage and then he said, he looked around and he goes, who's in charge? This woman says, I am. And she says, I should fire you right now. I didn't approve any of these people.
Unbelievable.
That's you got to check with me before you let anybody else on stage.
Wow. Talk about owning it.
That worked for like 30 minutes before we all got kicked
right,
out.
Right, yeah.
It was like cool.
Physically thrown out.
I feel like the equivalent now is if you wear a radio. If you go to a venue and you just wear a radio with a thing on your shoulder.
Yeah.
Nobody ever stops you. Because why would you have a radio?
He's got a radio. He must be somebody, right?
Exactly. And you just act like you're yelling at somebody when you walk by.
For sure, yeah. Nice. Dang, man. That's dope. That's dope.
Yeah. But I do remember, I have those moments. I remember seeing, okay, well, this is diverting from when you heard a song for the first time. Mm-hmm. But I remember the most insane musical experience for me live, which I'm more into recorded music than live music, but was 95 Central Park. It was either 95 or 96 Central Park concert series, a free concert series, seeing Roy Ayers, who, you know, at that time I was, you know, tracked back all the samples and Tribe Called Quest sampled them a lot and just all the great Roy Ayers record. And then the Roy Ayers that everybody knows is Everybody Loves Sunshine. Mm-hmm. So it was just like hot, muggy day with just a ton of people smoking weed in Central Park and listening, vibing out to Roy Ayers. And right when he goes into Everybody Loves the Sunshine, of course it starts to rain. And you know, like LA, the place is empty.
Yeah.
New York, not a single person moved.
Right.
It's like 95 degrees with rain. You're sweaty and high muggy, and rain coming down and like it plays a song for like 12 minutes.
Right. And you're into it though. You're having a good time. It.
Amazing. Yeah. Like just can't believe that's actually like happening because it's just too.
Yeah, it's too cool, man.
Too random.
And you remember it now. That's dope.
Of course.
That's dope.
Of course.
Man.
And then I tried to go see him like 3 months ago. Adrian Young does all this booking, all these insane, like, guys. The problem is some of them are, like, getting, you know, they're, like, classic musicians, so they're, some of them are really old.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of them bring their sons, and their sons are, like, on their plane.
Right, you know?
And Roy Ayers was playing, and he was not bad, but it was, like, not Central Park, you know, 20 years ago.
It's hard to live up to that moment, though.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
But it's just, you know, people a lot of times they say, oh, I want to work with this, you know, producer and who made these insane records in the 80s. And I'm like, do you want to work with them now or do you want to go back to 1980s?
Right. Because you're not going to get that.
They're not the same person. Their ears are different. Their taste is different. Their interests are different. The equipment they're using is different. Right. They're just in a different place in their lives, you know?
It's that moment's it's gone. It's different.
It could be better. It could be better, but it's different. Yeah. It's not the same.
Right.
You can't, you know.
Yeah. Totally.
And by the way, they don't want to do the same thing they did like 30 years ago.
Yeah.
They're like they did it enough.
Right. You know? For sure. Enough. Yeah.
But yeah, I remember also I can even remember digging in like certain times. I remember hearing there's this Brazilian music I love, and there's this like eclectic Brazilian artist named Tom Zé that I'd never heard of I was in Sao Paulo digging. There's this crazy, I don't know if it's still there, but there's this like crazy kind of rare record shop in a mall in like this really sketchy part of Sao Paulo. And I would go there every trip and start digging, and the guy knew the people that came in to like dig for breaks, and he would be like, you know, B-side 3.
Right.
Like on this, he knew exactly where the treasures were.
He's like, Mike, welcome back.
exactly.
I have a crate for you.
Exactly. Been waiting, right?
Tell nobody.
And hearing some of that stuff for the first time. But, you know, it's in this hot used record store in this mall, in this, you know, in like ducking out from
the records
from
are melting
a vacation basically which is hard. I mean, it's hard to find. Yeah, you'd put records on there and they would be unbalanced
because there's so much moisture so much heat. It's like it's worst case scenario for any kind of storage, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You just stick it in the big book for a while and let it flatten back out.
Hope for the best, right? Yeah. Not much bass left, but it's all good.
You know, also, I'll tell you another memory and just record that just sticks in my mind is there's actually a couple of them, but from this era when I was, 15, 16, 17 going out, there was this underage club sort of circuit in LA. Mm-hmm. And there was this one of the DJs, this guy was named Speedy, and he would play, everything we knew, but then he would play like a 30-minute, sort of 80s funk set. Mm-hmm. He'd play, One Nation Under the Groove. Yeah. He'd play Atomic Dog. He'd play Bounce Rock Skate Roll. Yeah. And I think, you'd heard some of the records that had been sampled, but I'd never heard some of those records in full, because Tribe Called Quest took you down this whole road of, Lonnie Liston Smith and Ron Carter and all this jazz and Roy Ayers and all this amazing East Coast stuff. I don't think like you dug into like the West Coast samples as much at that time. Or at least I didn't, because I wasn't kind of the hip hop. I was the beats I was sort of making.
Right.
But being in these clubs for the first time, like meeting girls from other high schools, sure. And then
which is a whole crazy experience in itself. It's like, because you only seen the same girls,
And it used to be at that point you're like, I don't know, it's just a whole different era, a whole different situation.
Sure.
Like you didn't have text relationship. You might like meet a girl at one of those places, and then you wouldn't see them or talk to them again until you saw them at another one of those places.
Right. Or if you schools played each other in homecoming or something, right?
Yeah.
Because there's no Instagram, there's no Facebook.
That wouldn't happen for me because I wasn't in those.
Yeah,
scenes.
It wasn't.
some of those records, some of the like Gap Band and just those bring me back to those clubs and this one DJ. And this one sort of shady promoter and this whole scene of people that was crazy.
But that's part of why you were, that's part of your thing. That's what made you.
Yeah. Yeah. It was also the lucky being in LA. In LA, we had like a West Hollywood club called Ballistics when I was like 13. You could go in at 13 years old.
Oh, really?
You could go
into
the club and they had like, all the relevant hip hop artists at that time played
crazy.
There.
Wow.
And it was this Hollywood scene of like, it was this, actually, my cousin ended up marrying one of the partners, but it was David, Bud Bundy. And there was this, and it was Nick Adler, who was Roxy, and they had this thing. So it was this totally friendly, environment.
Yeah.
What's the chances of that if you're from anywhere else?
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Zero.
Yeah. Because if it's happening in New York, there's something bad's happening that night. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't as happy.
It was 10 times cooler if it was happening in New York at that time. It was also.
Yeah, you weren't getting your teeth knocked out either.
That's true. There's this legendary A&R guy I thought was interesting, and I read an article from him a year or two ago that was crazy, where he was just outing a lot of people he worked with.
Oh, really?
And I was just like, I gotta go take this guy to lunch and like ask him some questions.
Right.
And he has a beard down to his belly, and he's like wears all white and like all the time, kind of like a kind of John Lennon looking guy. And
that's his persona. Yeah.
Exactly. The A&R Aerosmith for a long time. And the one thing I had seen something that he wore all black when he was in New York. And I was like, okay, what's up with all white in LA and all, and all white and black and all black in New York? Because I thought there was something like deep there.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, well, it's simply if I wore all white in New York, someone would punch me in the face and break my nose.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't want to get a broken nose.
Right, wow.
And that was it.
That was it. Simple as that.
Otherwise, I would have worn all white, but I couldn't get away with it.
Wow.
All white in LA, all black in New York, and gray in Chicago.
Gray, exactly. Something in the middle.
Yeah.
Something in the middle.
All right. Desert Island album.
Yeah.
You get one album. Can't be a compilation. Soundtracks are out. Greatest hits are okay. But you get one album for the rest of your life. What are you going with?
So I'm gonna sort of cheat, because I think people answer this without thinking that they're on a fucking island.
Right.
And then you got to go with the Bob Marley record.
All right. I like it.
Because you're stuck there. That's the vibe.
Because if you're going to come and say, I'm going to listen to, you know, like a Todd Rundgren or like some, you know, for 20 years on an island, you've never been on an island.
I like that.
I like it. Yeah.
Bob Marley on the island.
Like, plus, if you're stuck, you're just happy now.
Yeah.
Which goes back to one of my sayings with artists and writers. And they're like, co-write. I write my own songs. I want to co-write or cut someone else's song because of my artist and, you know, artistic integrity. Yeah. And I go, cool, that's all good. Bob Marley, he would never like co-write, like, or like, imagine if One Love was like a co-write. Yeah. And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, yeah, it was a co-write. Oh, shit, I forgot. You wrote that with Curtis Mayfield.
Bad example.
You don't want a Bob Marley level career.
Matter of fact, I'm not even going to an island. Why would I be on an island, right? Amazing.
The desert island one, that's impossible. They say the trick to like a diet is like you could eat absolutely anything if you just chose one thing to eat.
Yeah.
Because you would get sick of eating it. You start eating less and less of it because you just go. So to imagine only listening to one album on an island for the rest of your life is crazy.
Pretty brutal, yeah.
But I'm really just dancing around that. I think, I don't know. It's so crazy. That changes, you know, at the different times of your life. It would be absolutely impossible. I'd get a migraine just trying to think about the answer to that.
Yeah, because you're always listening to different music, and you just told us you go on vacation. You got 60 albums to get through while you're on vacation.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. Yeah, I do love. I mean, I'm not tired of listening to music. Pretty much ever. I do get tired of, you know, bad demos, but
I brought you a couple.
Man, so I have my answer to like now, like people not in the music business who bring me something to listen to, and they're like, "Do you mind listening to this?" And I'm like, "No problem, I'll listen to it as long as you've listened to it and you love it."
Yeah,
right.
And then 99% of the time, they're like, "No, I don't really love it, or I won't really listen to it, or I don't want to spend an hour listening to this." And it dead so it quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like, "Well, I don't really love it, and I haven't listened to all, but we listened to it anyways." And I'm like, "Why? How can I help you if you won't even know what I'm referencing?"
Right. Exactly.
You have to
do you know what I do for a living? It's music, right? So if you can't even if you can't even give me something to go from, you know?
Yeah. Which I'm happy to do, but it's, you know, but only for those that are, you know, committed to doing something with that information anyways. Right.
Yeah. Because the wasted time and wasted information and wasted talent is like, there's nothing worse. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Well, Mike.
What, can I get your Desert Island Discs? Since you guys clearly asked that question because you have them.
Oh, Bob Marley.
mine's Ray Charles Hits the Road.
Nice.
Because it's got like a pretty timeless vibe, obviously. Georgia on My Mind is my mom's favorite song. And then just the musicality of it. I feel like you could listen to it and keep yourself interested for a couple extra years. But yeah, nice. That would be it. It's like sentimental, fun, and timeless.
Where are you plugging the stereo into?
Yeah.
Coconut.
Yeah. No, you're on an island with the full stereo mic.
You brought the whole rig.
Subwoofers, the whole nine yards. It's a full PA surround setup. Yeah,
exactly.
Man.
What's yours?
Oh, the time just ran out on the thing.
You
guys are actually going to make fun of me because we talk about
Desperate Housewives soundtrack.
because mine kind of breaks the rule, but it doesn't. It's kind of like the exception.
Yeah.
Because we do. It's the one we always talk about, but it actually would be mine. It would be the Bodyguard soundtrack.
Yeah.
Like it literally, because it's got all of my favorite stuff on it.
Yeah.
And every time I listen to that, it's like, it's just a different, like I could picture chilling with it forever. It sounds kind of corny, but
you don't need a stereo. You can just take David Foster.
Exactly. David, let's go.
You got Wilson and I'll Always Love You.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens.
Pretty much. Or I'm Every Woman. Oh, that wasn't on there. No, the Queen of the Night. The Queen of Every Woman.
You know what? I just realized, I just thought of how Clive Davis got Whitney Houston to record that.
Huh.
I mean, for the movie, like if you think about it, like to do a well-known cover and that being one of her biggest songs, but yeah, she probably wouldn't have done a well-known cover for her own record. But right, for the soundtrack, you it can works. Make the excuse. You can say, he probably said, oh, the movie company is saying, yeah, this is the only song.
It's mm-hmm. what the character would do.
Exactly.
Like, you got to get into the movie or you're yeah. not going to get into yeah. That's, hey, that's pretty brilliant. I yeah. never, I would never even thought about
that's
that.
That's the whole reason they made the movie. That's
it. The movie. Now, the movie company said, we need Whitney. And Clive said, I'll do it as long as you put in the contract that there's a song she has to sing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Mike cracked the code. Who are these people jumping over the wall coming in here? Yeah.
The FBI just texted us.
Yeah, we got to go.
Right
there. We got to go. Well, Mike, right, thank you so much, man.
That was fun. Thanks, that was fun. Appreciate it.
I feel smarter. Do I look smarter?
You always look smart, but now you look smarter.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like pocket protector.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole nine.
I didn't even buy it. It just appeared after
that
episode.
Just was there.
Yeah, because he gave us so much knowledge.
Who we got next week, though, bro?
We got JoJo Gomez.
She is so dope, man.
The best dancer and choreographer in the game.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who you ask. She's the queen.
Yeah, exactly. When you talk about dancing, her name comes up immediately. Yeah.
She even walks cool. Like everything she does is cool.
And she's so sweet and humble too. It's weird to be so talented and so humble.
I know. She choreographed my video for Flexible.
Uh-huh.
And I got to go to rehearsal, obviously, and watch her do her thing.
Yeah.
And just like, it's unreal.
It's like she's not even human. Like, how do you do that?
Exactly. Right? And then somehow afterwards, I could kind of dance.
Yeah.
Well, just like
debatable.
Osmosis. Yeah. Debatable. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm still working on it.
Yeah. No doubt.
But
man,
she's awesome. She's a good hang.
For sure.
It's a good episode.
Yeah, man. JoJo Gomez next week.
Yeah, check it out. Tracks of Life.